We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. It is Wednesday, September 22nd. I'm here with Burt Robson of The Athletic, and we're, are we even a couple hours removed from the breaking news of the Minnesota Timberwolves parting ways with Gerson Rosas? Britt, this is obviously a major change of course for this organization in where they were going. Just judging from what I've seen, the little I've seen on Twitter thus far, it's been a major shock to the fan base and maybe something that they're very much against. Where are you at in your head when you see this news break today?
That it's bad news. That essentially it can't be what anybody wanted to have happen right now. There's nobody who benefits from the timing of this. The only thing I can imagine happened right now, short of incompetence, which is always an option, but I would say that what they're trying to do is prevent something from being worse. That's really where it's at right now, because this is bad. I mean, Carl Anthony Towns tweeted, you know, WTF shortly after it happened. When you have your tentpole star, not knowing what's going to happen with the franchise, along with everybody else, you know, not getting a courtesy call or whatever, that's a bad look. When you're getting rid of the guy who you just allowed to make further moves on your roster as recently as, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks ago, I think it was only 10 days. I don't know when the Beverly trade happened, but say a couple of weeks ago, the signings of the other guys, you know, okay, right. Somebody else could have done that on a caretaker basis. But the idea is that there's been chatter in the air about the Wolves still being very much involved in the Ben Simmons negotiation, trade talks, whatever. You've got a guy out there representing you who has put his imprint, for better or for worse, really totally on this franchise. And you just dumped them 6 days before training camp.
Right. Let's go back to the cap part, because okay. I think for me personally, that's the most surprising action of the day is that Cat, if he is in fact blindsided by this, right. That is a bit surprising to me, as because this happening is not Gerson Rosas being let go is not shocking to me. Would you echo that?
No, I was shocked because I'm shocked at the suddenness and the curtness, right. And the attitude. The fact that he was let go, I'm shocked that there was no rumblings, warnings to people who would run for it.
Let's reverse engineer it, because the reason, as I understand it, is that it was so now is that Mark Lowry has come in and has started his vetting process of the employees within the organization, right? And that's just that timeline kind of happens to be like Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez is growing autonomy has allowed them to be able to start looking into the organization and saying, this is what we want to keep. This is what we want to, you know, get rid of. I think for most of us, we thought that that was probably going to be things a lot more on the margins, probably things more about the stadium, more about the business operations, more about all that. But they conducted a full-on, you know, vetting process of everyone within the organization and obviously the high-end people like Gerson Rosas. And in that process...
Let me stop you right there. If that's true, this decision right now, without warning, is a mistake.
Sure. I'm not...
But what I mean is, I'm shocked that these fancy-dancy new lawyers that are promising utopias, you know, totally screwed up. I am shocked at that.
Okay. I would, in a vacuum, I would be shocked at that too. But I think we also have the point that the reference point that both of us have that there has been loud rumblings of dissentment within the Gerson Rosas front office. For me, you know, I heard about that more towards the beginning of the summer.
Right.
And I didn't think that was like, I mean, it's not the end of a president of basketball operation just because there's some headbutting within the organization there. That actually happens within a lot of teams.
Right.
But as the summer kind of went on, you were like, okay, maybe this is a little bit more than normal, just headbutting going on within the front office, within the organization there. And then for me, being at Summer League, you know, that's when it became apparent to me that this isn't even like a secret. Everyone there that I talked to seemed to very much know that, you know, Gerson Rosas was having some serious conflict within his front office and thus within his organization. And that's when I started hearing the idea that, you know, he's not going to make it to the beginning of the season.
Okay. Let me stop you again. I know a lot of the people who cover this team, as do you. I prefer to be blissfully ignorant about this stuff because it's not why I'm here.
Right.
I've turned down jobs that required me to do this kind of bullshit. I won't do it. Right. So, but there are people, fair, thorough people on the beat who do it, who do mm-hmm. their due diligence. And they did not feel like it rose to the level of breaking a story until the story broke itself. That indicates to me that some of the people making the noise didn't want to make noise on the record,
mm-hmm.
or that the noise that was made once vetted wasn't as noisy as originally appearing. I think that careful, thorough beat writers who were chasing this story, I trust them to put something out if it warranted putting something out. Clearly, they may have not gotten all the information, or the information they got versus what the information, whether it's Lori, A-Rod, Glenn Taylor, you name it, they had a different reaction to it. But
I think just because you know something, Britt, doesn't mean that it is the best time or in your best interest to go public with it at that time. I think that's what was happening.
And I think that's also very much true of Mark Lori or whoever broke this.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is, again,
there's a lot of moving factors in here, because this whole ownership thing is obviously in and of itself is bizarre, because you have these owners who have power, but do not have like the legal 51% power to actually be able to do something. You have dissension coming from within the front office, but those aren't the most powerful people in the organization. If you're a beat writer, if you're me, if you're you, whatever, the most important person is Gerson Rosas. So all these things are converging on Gerson Rosas, who is the president of basketball operations, who might get let go. Well, what if he doesn't? You don't want to be the person being like, oh, and this and that and this and that. That's why I think we didn't hear a lot of public parts of it. That's why I didn't share anything. That's why I didn't share anything.
All right. But short of doing something illegal, why is this a good time?
I want to stay away from that part.
Being fired now be a good thing for this franchise? If the owners of this franchise want the franchise to flourish,
Why we don't know. We don't know what came out in the vetting process, Britt. That's what
exactly. So what I'm saying is, it has to rise to a level. At the very least, you could do it midway through preseason, before media day. Media day comes and goes, or whatever. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is, right now, this casts the franchise in a bad light. It casts the franchise as one that can't control its own dysfunction in a manner.
This franchise clearly cannot do that. They cannot. Right, well, let's go back to it. The Finch thing.
Its own dysfunction.
Yeah.
There is more than Gerson Rosas's alleged dysfunction at work here.
Oh, 100%. I'm not disagreeing with that. I mean,
So my point is that I remain shocked. I actually do think that I don't care what gets vetted here. You tell the people who have been aggrieved apparently for weeks, if not months, that they have to wait a few more weeks or months.
Right.
And then you do the thing.
If it's just that, if it's just dissension within the front office, then this is at best procrastination, right? Like, then you should have just done it. You should have done it if you're going to. Or something more happened, Britt.
All right. All I'm saying is the guy who was in the seat was making moves as recently
as a couple of days ago, yeah.
And I conducted three interviews for a story I'm doing with Wolves personnel today. The fourth interview suddenly got canceled. So I don't think this is an expert rollout. I think this is like, whoa, all right, you know.
Right. And, I think it's a whoa.
Yeah.
But I think both are true. I think things were going on and then something has come to light in the past few days or week. That's my read on the situation right now. Again, something we're recording seismic, this like
my read as well is something seismic shifted. My point is,
and I think that's about to come out. I'm just staying away from that right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's going to come out too, but I think it had better be of course they needed to do this. It needs to be pretty damn clear cut that some kind of stain needed to be thrown on the canvas before we start erasing it, instead of just waiting to throw the stain at another time. Because, again, this is otherwise. And I don't listen. I didn't chase the story. I don't want to chase the story.
I got you.
All I know is that unless it's a matter for the court system, then the Timberwolves have control over their own destiny here. And they have not controlled their destiny well here. They have injured their franchise. Everybody working for that club right now is diminished compared to where they were 2 hours ago.
That's true. That's true. I think a stain is coming.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope so. Because otherwise, you know, I mean,
otherwise this timing is terrible. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's media day on Monday.
Right.
On Monday. This is crazy. This is crazy timing. This is a crazy important year for this team.
Right.
You are to some degree in the midst of being able to make a massive trade for an all NBA player potentially and Ben Simmons. Like, there's a whole lot of shit going on right now, you know,
right.
Like it's a terrible time to fire your president.
And as
of basketball
you and I
operations.
Have talked about, it's also a very pivotal season.
Yes. That's what I was going to say next. Right.
And you are giving guys who may want to take that pivot a much easier avenue.
Right. Yeah. That's the scary part. I mean, dysfunction on top of dysfunction gives, you know, it gives Cat credence to tweet what WTF, you know,
right.
It gives, you know, if and when the time comes that Cat is, you know, ready to
if
move
Kat
on.
Cat is unhappy
like,
and wants out. Who is
he
going
can point,
to say, oh, you know,
why?
What a
why did you do
guy?
That of this team? No, yeah, totally. I mean, that's the bummer of it. And that's why it's like, I feel bad for the fans, right? Like, again, this isn't an isolated incident. I mean, going back to, you know, Tom Thibodeau's final year as head coach, Jimmy Butler, you go on, you fire him, you bring in Ryan Saunders as an interim head coach when he didn't have any head coaching experience. And that, you know, that's all bizarre. And to carrying Ryan over once you hire Gerson Rosas, you know, bizarre, country club, whatever. It doesn't make sense. Then the Chris Finch eventually hired over him thing, Malik Beasley in the midst of that. I mean, this is crazy. There's just so much crazy going on with this team that I wouldn't fault Cat at all for being, you know, frustrated. And I mean, they've got to recover. They fumbled the ball. They got to recover the ball here because Cat's one leg to this. Another one of it is like Ant is also experiencing all this too.
Right.
He's only been here 1 year and he's Ryan got, you know, fired out of the blue. And in his eyes, all of a sudden you have a new head coach in here. I mean, this is bad. You know,
other franchises have similar problems that we just don't hear about. I mean, there's a big story out today in NOLA.com about David Griffin and his dysfunction.
Right.
You know, I mean, these are things the Lakers, I mean, famously went through their family thing. You know, they had Phil Jackson's, you know, significant other is in the middle of, you know, some kind of war with other people on the, you know, I mean,
it's just so much more dangerous when you're the New Orleans Hornets or you're the Minnesota Timberwolves than if you're the Los Angeles Lakers.
I think the spotlight is bigger, and it did cost a franchise of many years. You know, I mean,
well, what's been the rumbling around New Orleans now for like the past year? It's like, if they don't write this, like maybe Zion takes the qualifying offer and, you know, and gets out of there, and he would be justified because it's a perpetually dysfunctional organization. They've made a bunch of mistakes, yada, yada, yada. Zion Williamson is the first guy to take his qualifying offer and leave as soon as
possible. We've heard that over and over again, too.
We've heard that over and over again.
Believe it when I see it.
I don't know. I do think that will eventually come. And I hope, as somebody who covers the Timberwolves and you know, wants them to do well and very much enjoys
Ant, right?
Covering Ant, I, God damn, it better not be Anthony Edwards, you know? And I'm not saying I think it will be, but the way you get there, if that happens to Zion in New Orleans or anyone anywhere, it's because your organization kept fumbling the ball, not picking it up, and getting back on track. Now, maybe this, Britt, maybe this was about to lead to something worse. And, you know, like I think
you said at the beginning. That's the only thing. That is the only plausible explanation is that, you know, I'm not going to cast aspersions on Gerson Rosas right now other than to say that what he did has to have been fairly dastardly to pull the shootout now and you know, make the trap door, have him go away or whatever. I mean, what I will say, let's flip to a little bit of positive news. Everything I know about this franchise says that Chris Finch is safe.
Yes. Yes. I would confirm that.
I mean, there isn't anybody in, and again, I don't report the story, but sometimes things come to me. Most people who have said things to me about this situation, you know, before this tsunami today, said that Chris Finch is popular everywhere. He's popular at the top of the organization. He's popular at the bottom of the organization.
It's popular on this podcast. Between us, right? I mean, yeah.
Yes, he is. He's very much popular.
You've been saying for maybe 6 months now, like, the
Finch and Ant, right?
Yeah, the two biggest things are Finch and Ant. And, like, yeah, I mean, that's not going to change. And I know this is going to be its whole sort of gray cloud right now. Reality of the situation is they're going to go play basketball on Tuesday. They're going to start practice. And,
you know, the
players are going to be the same.
They've been practicing constantly.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, this is much more encouraging than Brazil or whatever the hell it was.
Bahamas.
There you go.
Brazil.
Yeah.
It is. I think, I mean, for me, this doesn't change my, like, optimism relative to, like, again, like the Vegas open, like 33.5. Like, I don't think firing. Yeah, I did
I would bet the over.
Right, I would easily bet the over. I mean, because the roster's the same. It still is talented, and if you believed in it, it's because you believed in Chris Finch being able to navigate a tricky, unbalanced
and
roster.
Let's even say that it's because let's say that Rosas, there's a lot of Rosas loyalists on the roster. Let's just say that. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
But what better way to honor Rosas than to go out and win a bunch of games and say, hey, build a pretty good team.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, there really isn't any way to get revenge on anybody or screw with anybody. I mean, the worry, of course, is that the two tentpole stars, Cat and D'Lo, want out immediately. But we've talked about that being like a timeline issue anyway, that may happen at the end of this season if they both underperform anyway.
I think the roster is not like it is what it already was. Like, you're going to go into training camp and perform as you were going to perform. I don't think that changes all that much. I don't think Kat is going to be flailing angrily or anything like that. Like, I don't think that changes. What does change is you have a new president of basketball operations in place in Sachin Gupta. And
has he been announced?
Yes. Yes. He is the interim president of basketball operations while they conduct a search, a broader search for the long-term option.
Uh-huh.
What I think is interesting about Sachin Gupta, and I think not many people would know this, is I feel confident in saying that Sachin is much less aggression than Gerson Rosas was in terms of tactics. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think if you put the word passive in front of it, I would, yes.
Yeah. And I think he's
a passive aggressive individual.
Exactly. Well, I'm talking in terms of the trade market. I mean, I think Gerson Rosas was as it was billed, his strategy was like, as it was Daryl Morey's, like, let's get the star players, because, you know, this is a star driven league, this and that, like, which is very clearly one way to win in the NBA. That is not a wrong way to go about it.
Right.
But we also have another like way that teams are building throughout the league. Obviously, like the main one people would point to is Oklahoma
Denver.
City, really. The slowest one, the least aggressive, the passive, opportunistic would be Oklahoma City. But then I think you have your Denvers, and I think you have your Memphises that are attempting to build more linearly rather than exponentially.
Right.
We don't have time to go vet through all those different things. Memphis and Denver are in different places in their progression. But I think if you follow the league, you know that those teams are going to, you know, operate a little slower. I don't think those teams would have made the D'Angelo Russell trade. I think they would have been less connected to definitely re-signing Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez when that happened. I think the Sam Hinkie line, right, was I want to have the longest view in the room, right? And Sam Hinkie's partner in crime, number two in Philadelphia, was Sachin Gupta. And similar to how I think Sam Hinkie gets mislabeled as like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, a tank on the process. I'm going to go super, super slow.
Right, right,
like,
right.
I think Sam Hinkie's way of evaluating it is he's going to play it all out, right? He's going to look at all the different sort of options and if the best option is to be a little bit more aggressive. Like, I don't think if Sam Hinkie took over a team today that they would start the process 2.0.
Well,
I don't think Sachin Gupta will either.
The people who defend the process always say this. I'm not saying anything new, but I will say they also found some pretty good, not diamonds in the rough, but gems in the rough. You know, sure. some things that belong on wedding rings in the rough, you know. And so, they found some really functional NBA players in some obscure corners. And Rosas.
All the while accumulating assets. The while accumulating assets.
Right.
Yes.
And so I do think that you can be thus incremental if you are in the asset accumulation business. And I would argue that the huge danger of the exponential leap is overestimating your big purchases.
Right.
You know?
Totally. That's well put. I think too, like, it's an interesting change from Gupta to Rosas is, I mean, Rosas' idea for roster construction, which to be fair, never got truly proved out if this was a good or bad idea. But I mean, Gerson is of the 30 GMs in the league, I think the biggest believer in pace in the entire NBA. I think that's a fact. With you see what he had Ryan Saunders and still, you see the moves he, you know, that he made to the roster in terms of personnel. You see them, the hiring of Chris Finch. I mean, Chris Finch ran the offense in New Orleans when Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins were both starting for that team, and they led the league in pace. Like, Gerson Rosas is pace, pace, pace. And that leads to a certain type of roster that we've seen be put in place over this whole time that, you know, to be honest, you and I have been like, I don't know if that's totally right. Like, maybe they need to have a guy who's like 7 foot tall on the team. Like, maybe they need some more defense. Maybe they need some more strength. I don't think we know. I feel actually pretty confident in saying I know that Sachin Gupta is not Gerson Rosas in that way. Not because Sachin necessarily dislikes pace or anything like that, or that type of style. I just think Gerson is so far on this, was so far on the spectrum in that direction that, you know, Sachin is going to be a little bit more towards the moderate side of it, and wouldn't rule out, you know, bringing in a 7-footer to play next to Cat. Wouldn't rule out a, you know, prioritizing defense a little more than prioritizing offense. Now, I don't know which one's better. We didn't get to see either of them happen. Me over here with my microphone, I have my opinions, but we don't know. I'm just saying, as I think about this and react to it immediately, I think that Sachin is going to pursue roster construction very differently than Gerson Rosas did.
Right. And since, theoretically at least, the book is closed on Gerson Rosas in terms of maneuvers, what I would say is that...
Did you say theoretically? The book's closed.
Well, book's, I mean, closed, I think he sold himself really well in the beginning and convinced me that he was something different. And then he went through a trough. And also there was places where, you know, the whole idea of playing a certain way, even if you don't have any personnel to play that way, in retrospect, I'm frankly surprised that I let that go without, you know, thinking anything about
same,
it.
Same, man.
And so, but here's what I will say in terms of blanket things. Gerson Rosas with Chris Finch beside him is a much better general manager than Gerson Rosas with Ryan Saunders beside him, because he has a check and a balance. He had a check and a balance. And I think that, as a result, his best move, and I don't think it's even close, is the Beverly trade. I mean, that's just a home run. And that's just a great move in so many ways. And that's the kind of thing where you start to say, all right, the general manager, you know, he addressed a need on defense while addressing a need on offense while clearing dead wood from the roster. I mean, you know.
That's great.
So anyway, there goes my phone. So
let's take a quick break.
All right.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, Britt, let's bring it back in here. Let's talk a little bit more about the moves because that Gerson Rose has made over time, because I think you are right in saying that that Patrick Beverly, that trade, I mean, you and I both, A to A plus on, yep, on that move there. There's other good moves along the way too. I would point to the next best move in the Rose's regime would probably be liquidating Robert Covington for two first round picks. That, you know, became, you know, one of those two first round picks became Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez, which I think, like, the way that's at least in process or in theory, what was a, you know, was a very strong move. Obviously, we all liked Covington. The defense got hurt a little bit in his absence, but like where Covington was at in his career and where the Timberwolves clearly were in the rebuild, like to get two first round picks for that, I think, you know, I think that was a, you know, that was a strong move. I think he also, right, he also cleared in time Jeff Teague, making substantial, like $18 million when he went on the next year to get a minimum. He traded, you know, got off of Gorgie Jang, which was also a massive overpay for what he was, you know, making on that time versus production. Gorgie Jang turned into James Johnson. James Johnson turned into Ricky Rubio. Like, I think if you kind of connect all the dots there, you know, those were some strong moves too. But obviously, there's some bad ones. There's some really bad ones. And obviously, like the ones we can say are really bad. You want to take the bad ones? Go ahead. I see you.
Well, no, I was going to actually besmirch some of your good ones. I think I agree. Even though Jeff Teague produced the infamous Alan Crabb, I still think that was a good move. I grudgingly agree that Rocco's departure led to a slightly better team, but I would not say it was a great move. I think it was a move I reluctantly endorsed, kind of like I endorsed the Wiggins D'Lo trade. A lot of misgivings, but, and then also, you know, that my feeling on, I did, you know, Gorgie for James Johnson, felt like rearranging furniture. Johnson, yeah, for Rubio felt to me like as much of a PR move as a basketball move.
Fair. I think what I'm more just thinking about it is like in terms of money, and like no more bad money was really added on. He took a patient approach 2 years.
I agree with that. He was not, and that marks him, quite frankly, as an outlier in Timberwolves personnel management.
Right.
Very few people, even Jared Culver, I mean, cutting your losses on a guy that was your first pick, he did have a pretty good eye for value.
The Rubio extended a year longer, the James Johnson money. So I guess I'm not totally right that no money was added on. But like,
I don't think he got some of that back, and he got Taurean Prince. I mean, if you want to, you know.
Yeah, and a second.
I am better with the Rubio deal now that, you know, the James Johnson thing has come and gone.
Right.
And Taurean Prince, for all we know, you know, will be, he'll be an interesting, he's still a pretty intriguing piece.
Yeah, I'm with that. The Malik thing could have been a major
money,
win.
You know,
that's true. Right. You know, cleared money for that. The Malik thing would have been a major win had there not been the off-court issues.
Right. And still, you know, isn't a bad issue. I mean, the guy can shoot.
So now that you poke some holes in the positives, or we poke some holes in the positives, I mean, the negative. Well, we also, never mind. We got three more positives in Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, and Naz Reid, in the two drafts. I think those are all obviously, you know, very good moves on, you know, a sliding scale of Naz being an undrafted player, but those were strong moves as well. To get to the negatives, you know, Jarrett Culver was obviously, a really flop.
It was a whiff.
Number six.
It was a whiff.
Yeah, and to trade up for it too there. I mean, you're not going to bet. You're not going to bet 1,000%.
However.
Somewhat. I mean, still, you still would have liked more than out of the number six pick than, you know, eventually using it to trade for Patrick Beverley at 14 a year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, if I'm going to rip people for things they've done.
I'm not even trying to rip it, man.
I know.
We're just laying out bullet points.
I know. I know you want the segment to move faster than it's moving. Right?
No, I don't care.
I can tell. But I mean, what I will say is that Jared Culver got us a piece of Patrick Beverley, and I think Patrick Beverley, even if he's injured for 40 games, which is entirely possible,
right,
is going to make a difference.
I'm just looking at the PR.
Another statement?
Yeah, no, it's just the official that Gupta is in charge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was not aware of that. That was your inside information.
Well, it's official now. And yeah, I obviously, you know, the elephant in the room is the D'Lo Wiggins swap, which, as you said before, and, you know, and I said at the time, I thought that move was a win.
People underestimate what an anchor Wiggins was on the whole franchise.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was bullish on it at the time that was a good move. I think it just did, knowing that I have gone through this and like reprocessed my own thoughts on it. Like, I wish I would have taken more time to look at exactly what the Wolves gave up in that, a top three pick. I didn't really think about, you know, how dangerous only top three protection could be. They also gave up their, you know, their second round pick in that draft as well.
Right.
And that was some pretty serious draft capital strapped on to Wiggins, considering you're taking back D'Angelo Russell, who's definitely a better player in my view, but also not a positive contract, you know, at the time. So I still think it, I don't like hate that move because of the Wiggins.
I don't hate the move either.
I think it's more of an opportunity cost question. Could have you got something else?
What number one pick had to be, I mean, a first rounder had to be added to that to get rid of Wiggins. And it was, but it was also came with a player that, you know, is slightly better.
Yeah. On a contract that is still negative, but slightly better. I mean, maybe more than slightly better, but yeah. So, I mean, that's all of it. I wouldn't say that is a like bad list of, you know, accomplishments. Quite frankly, I think Gerson Rosas is sitting there today thinking, you know, I wasn't done. Like, I had to take the first two years to get off of all that bad money to get off of Wiggins. I got totally unlucky with Cat, who had been healthy his whole career, missing a bunch of time, having personal tragedy. I mean, I think a lot of that, you know, is fair from Rosas, and he really didn't get to see his moves play out, particularly D'Angelo Russell, because he thinks that is a much better move than we think it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And if D'Angelo Russell flowers and becomes what all his stands think is going to happen, and Rosas thinks is going to happen, then this is a pretty...
Or even what I think is going to happen. Know me. I mean, I'm pretty bullish on D'Lo this year.
Yeah, I know.
Not like a stan.
I'm not going to hold him against you.
But I'm just like, I think Rosas, you know, didn't get to finish the book. Right.
It will be fun if D'Lo plays a little defense. And I've said this many times. I don't need to repeat it in book form, just a very abridged way. What I will say is the D'Lo we saw under Finch is a D'Lo that I can get behind. I can say he can't play defense, but he's a guy you want with the ball in his hands, you know, and the clock winding down. He's not totally selfish enough that he can feed people, you know, and he's got some really intriguing attributes on offense.
Right. And an interesting, you know, thing specifically to D'Lo, or now as I'm just kind of like thinking out loud with, you know, Patrick Beverley, you know, there, I think there was some connection there between Rosas right? And those guys, I think D'Lo was aware of the idea that Rosas was very bullish behind him, very like authentically supportive and a D'Angelo Russell believer. I don't know how much that matters. I would think it matters some. I would imagine Patrick Beverley coming here. I mean, he got traded. He didn't choose to sign here, so it's a little bit different. But maybe, you know, maybe Patrick Beverley, if Gerson Rosas wasn't here, maybe he says, you know, actually, I would have wanted to get bought out or something, or I would have wanted to be traded
again.
Although
I will say that everybody I've talked to, I do have some interesting connections with Beverley, just in terms of smart basketball people who have seen him play in different places a lot.
Yeah. I already know he's going to be your favorite player. I already know that.
He's just one of those guys that everybody around, if he's on your team, you love him. And, I think that he will put a positive spin on anything to do this, and also will hold people accountable, you know. And
right.
He wowed me at the press conference. Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's a lot of things about him I really like. I don't like the cheap shots. I think he could discipline himself a little bit more, but I have absolutely no complaints with the fact that he's barely over 6 feet tall and he nullifies shooting guards. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Dude, he's a dog, man. I mean, I've just like Synergy cuts it up really well where you can just watch all the defensive
possessions. Rewatch the Phoenix series on Devin Booker.
I know, man.
He throttled Devin Booker.
It's defense porn. I mean, he's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Right.
He
was blocking Booker from, he had Booker looking over his shoulder whenever he drove to the basket.
Right. I literally the only concern I have about it, because I don't think they gave him anything. And he's 33, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can't play that long that hard. Right.
Right. Right. And then, I mean, PJ Tucker thinks otherwise, but, you know, like,
well, DJ Tucker doesn't move like Beverly moves.
That's true. That's true. So, I mean, well, we'll see. I mean, obviously, I haven't even really wrapped my head around the Wolves roster. Is kind of planning on, you know, trying to get some questions answered at Media Day. And I, you know, actually this afternoon I was, you know, prepping like a pod I was going to do with Jace, just about like, what are the questions, you know, we want to answer in training camp,
right?
Like, what do we want to learn about the defense? What do we want to learn about the power forward position? What do we want
to
learn
about? Now the big question is WTF.
Right, man. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. I mean, it's, you know, I haven't been doing this that long, and it's really my first full year on the beat was the Tibbs Jimmy year. Right. Like,
right.
And you know, at Media Day that year, like, I mean,
surreal, right?
It's just like, on a personal level, it's just nuts to think back on, like that year, and then, you know, the 1920, like they start out really good, you know, Cat's playing well. Ryan's first year, Cat gets in a fight with Embiid, Cat gets hurt, team falls apart, 11 game losing streak, 13 game losing streak. Boom, trade the entire roster. Then you get 12 games, then COVID hits. Like, what? A pandemic? I mean, and then, you know, moving into this, it's just
they didn't get to go to the bubble.
Right. I mean,
then D'Lo gets hurt after Cat gets hurt after D'Lo gets hurt after Cat gets hurt.
And it's just, I saw your tweet today. It's like, I mean, I'm here for the hoops too. It's just that, like, that even though we would prefer to make that the story, it has so not been the story for the past, you know, three years.
Well, it's an adjunct story. And to be honest with you,
I mean, I feel like we've hit on it on the hoops about as much as we possibly could, given the circumstances.
Here's the deal. If people want to focus on that, they can. But that's not what I'm going to write about.
Right.
You know? And so I'm going to write about, you know, sure, I will write about when Ryan Saunders gets fired and Vanderpool gets, leapfrogged. I will talk about all of a sudden how the Bahamas and Kumbaya and family seems like so much bullshit. I will say that.
And well, that ties into the hoops. You're writing about off-court things like that actually matter to the product on the floor. I'm with that completely.
And that's the thing. That's my lens. I mean, there was a lot of gossip that was flying around this summer, and there was a lot of things that I heard from people.
An incredible amount.
That struck me as factual, that sounded concerning. There goes the phone again. We'll just let it ride. So, anyway, it has not been.
I can't believe you have a house
ride.
Phone. Huh? I can't believe you have a house phone.
Yet another lesson in aging. Wait till somebody says to you, you know, I can't believe you have a microchip in your pocket instead of like in your ear, you know.
if we make it there, if the Timberwolves make it there. Anyway, continue. Phone's
done. The game will be there. Hoops will be there. They have a good roster. Yes, this will impact some of that. And yes, you know, God love them, the John Krasinski's and Chris Hines and Jace Fredericks of the world, and probably even you will chase, you know, some of the sordid details of this. And I'll read it and I'll absorb it. But at the end of the day, you know, unless it has a negative impact on Cat, or unless, you know, something terrible happens, or suddenly Mark Laurie strangles Glenn Taylor, I'm not interested.
I'm not a beat writer. Which is why it was surprising to me how much of this stuff just showed up on my front porch this summer.
Right.
And I mean, and that isn't even just Rosa specific ownership.
No,
stuff.
You
I mean, that, you, I'm talking. It's been unavoidable.
Believe me, it's avoidable. There was a period of time where a lot of this stuff showed up on my doorstep.
No, you just talked about, you've heard things this summer as well.
Oh, yeah, I know. You're right.
And you don't even have a microchip phone.
You do have, you have a more active interest in it than I do. And that's a compliment. That's not, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah. I know I do.
I literally shut myself down to that aspect. You know,
I'm not ashamed of it at all. I think it's interesting because I find the roster construction part of the NBA fascinating, just like I find the hoops fascinating. And when you start hearing things about how the president of basketball operations is completely at odds with his entire front office and the new ownership group, you go, what the hell is going to happen here?
Right.
Because it's going to change the roster construction.
Right.
It's going to change the way they build the team.
Right.
It's going to change everything. So I'm going to pay attention to it. It's not just news to everyone else. It's news to me. It completely, people listening to this podcast, I think have been able to tell over the past 4 or 5 months that I have changed my tone on Gerson Rosas. Mm-hmm. I think you have. And that's because when you start getting information about things and hearing about what actually went down in the D'Angelo Russell trade, and how they paid a lot more than they planned on, and same with Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez and a whole bunch of other things that were weird, you go, wait, I've been here talking to Britt, talking to whoever on this podcast for 2 years, being like, trust the process. You know, like, we've both been all about it, right? We've been like, yes, competent front office.
And I'm probably still more about it than you are.
Well, yes, you are. You are. But it changed for me some. I still wasn't like out on it because, you know, I think Rosas is a competent, you know.
I think it's a fascinating team this year.
Yeah.
I would take the over on the wins. And I think if everything breaks right, I think even if everything doesn't break right, they're still in the play-in discussion if that thing still exists. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would take the odds of them going to the playoffs, which I imagine are larger odds than I need to bet that, you know.
Right. Which is fun.
Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, Jade McDaniels, Patrick Beverley, You know, D'Angelo Russell.
Nas Reed,
go ahead. You know, I mean, there are ways. And guys, you know, you got eighth guys. Torian Prince is your eighth man now, you know.
If that.
You know, Jared Vanderbilt, you know. And you've got – it's – and Chris Finch knows what he's doing. I mean, I do know that. So
– right. It's – you know, it's going to be – It's going to be fascinating, and you know the variables have now changed, where things are going to be somewhat different. But I don't think people need to be like out on this team now, for you know for any reason. I think subsequent reporting is going to happen,
unless the coming stain is something horrible.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think that is going to be a you know it's going to be a hill to climb, but you know that's not on Timberwolves fans. Whatever, like Timberwolves right. fans are fans of the team. I think for a long time the diehard Timberwolves fans have stopped being a fan of the organization,
right
because it's too much of this, you know. It's too much Glenn, you know. It's too much Glenn. And
well, Glenn's got to be having the last laugh here.
The last something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, Glenn Taylor's saying, all right, you know, try to figure out a way to blame me for this.
Okay, I got you. But at the end of the day, from a fan perspective, or from our perspective, once we get through that, whatever this bullshit's going to be, like, it's going to be basketball. And it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best basketball team I've ever covered here by a mile.
Well, but I don't know. The 10th year with Jimmy was good.
Yeah, but I wasn't doing it full time.
Okay.
That year.
All right. If you want to exempt yourself from that year, but I will say that was a pretty good team.
That was. I don't think they'll be that good. They won, what, 48 games? I don't think they won 48 games, right?
And they probably could have won like 51 if Butler had been healthy and a little bit saner.
Right. So, I mean, in the midst of what is kind of a messy, bad thing right now, like
put it this way, the long term prospects for this roster are better than what Tibbs had.
True. Yeah. Well, it's what me, you, and John said when we talked in Vegas. Like, when you look at this team and the, you know the timelines thing, they're both nice. They both have favorable outcomes that are plausible.
By the way, I'll put in a plug here.
All right.
I think that John Krasinski is the guy to read in the next 24 hours.
I've been texting him. I think you got something. I think people got something coming, and you know he's.
There's nobody better at this in terms of pawing through the remains and identifying where the remains came from. That's a John Krasinski forte.
100%. For many reasons, you know, people are, you know, lucky. Timberwolves fans are lucky to have John on the beat, but this is going to be a story I don't envy having to cover, and John will kill it. And you know, and as will Chris and Jace, you know, they'll be all over it as well. And you know, we'll figure it out. And on Monday, we'll do a media day, and you know, the soap opera will continue. And you know, and maybe there'll be, you know, maybe there'll be some basketball eventually.
I'm sure there will be.
All right, Brett. I think that's enough for us today. I'm sure we'll sit down and do actual basketball season preview here in a little bit. I appreciate you coming on and doing this.
Like, hey, my pleasure.
On no time. And just for the listeners, like we literally started recording this like, I don't know, maybe an hour after the news broke. So
Once we got the computer figured out, would have been even sooner.
I am sitting here now realizing you haven't been wearing headphones the whole time. So I'm wondering if your audio has been echoey the whole time. But you know what?
Hasn't been echoey for me.
Okay. You know what? We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And, you know, and we'll do another pod. I mean, maybe next week. Once media day happens on Monday and training camp starts on Tuesday. He's Britt Robson, working on a story that will not
maybe
publish anytime soon.
For a while, right?
But obviously,
because it has to do with basketball.
Follow everything Britt's writing at The Athletic, and as he plugged John Krasinski, I'm sure he might have two stories up by the time that this is in your ear bells. So let's just keep going. as a group following this team. You know, life goes on. It is. They're the Timberwolves, man. This is part of the game. He's Britt Robson. I'm Dane Moore at Dane Moore NBA. I'll talk to you in the coming days. Until then.
How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.